So now I'm going to switch gears back to kind of the fundamental nuts and bolts of what you need to look at when you are looking at a retail electric supply agreement in ERCOT. And so they're not as standard as the EEI and the NAISB that we talked about, but there are sort of a host of checklist issues that you kind of always need to look at. This is not a complete list, but I'm going to walk through some of these and what are important to look at. The first is always the energy charge. What's the energy price that a customer is going to pay? Because obviously they're going to care about that the most. But the really important question is that clearly defined? You know, a lot of large customers still like to lock in their prices and their risks, so they will look for a fixed energy charge. But you can see some more interesting products in the market. For example, an index price that's tied to the wholesale power price or an LMP for a particular node. And you might see a hybrid of that, for example, where you block in a fixed rate for a certain amount of their load, but then the customer wants to kind of play in the market for a little bit and tie it to an LMP. It's important that those indexes obviously be clearly defined, and because, you know, they can provide some benefit to the customer, but they need to understand the risk and the volatility of the market. For example, any customers that were, you know, riding wholesale power prices this summer, when we had scarcity pricing conditions in August, if they weren't fully aware of what was going on in their contract, you know, they had a pretty high month. You see a variety of other options, hybrid rates, heat rate products, and then there's also obviously a lot of renewable options out in the market. The other checklist item that's very important to look at, that's probably the second most important item, is what are the non-energy charges and exactly how are they passed through and are they really clearly defined? Most very large, sophisticated clients really understand the component of the bill that are the non-energy charges, but I do see some clients that are large customers, for example, school districts or church dioceses or a particular type of customer that, you know, uses a lot of power, but it's not their main feedstock, so they don't focus on it as much. And they kind of lose sight of the non-energy charges component of their bill. And they also often work with brokers. And so the brokers don't necessarily focus and tell them what component of their bill this is. And so they really do need to look at it. They also need to look and see if they have a fixed price product, how certain charges, if they're baked into the fixed price or not. I've seen a combination of both. I've also seen some very poorly defined non-energy terms where it just really wasn't clear, for example, whether ancillary charges that ERCOT imposes on the reps are going to be passed through and baked into the fixed charge or not. So you should always get clearly define those. TDU charges, for example, those are standardly passed through on the agreements and separated out from the energy charges. And sometimes, you know, one of the questions that you need to ask is, you know, who's going to bear the risk of a regulatory change? Last year, ERCOT was looking at potentially changing the line loss component, which could have changed some of the pass-through charges on the bill. And so, you know, who's going to bear that risk? Another item that really should be obvious when folks are looking at contracts, but sometimes I'm seeing some interesting things with respect to delivery terms. You know, delivery terms and rep agreements are going to be shorter than your wholesale agreements. But in the market, I've seen some instances where reps are essentially trying to sleeve renewable projects through a retail agreement and kind of shoehorn it there and push through longer delivery terms onto the customer to mitigate their risk. And if a customer isn't sophisticated and used to longer term products, then that may not be something that's right for them. You need to go over that with your clients. Changes in consumption are an item that is often discussed in standard retail electric agreements, and your clients need to understand whether the contract allows for them to change their consumption, basically their anticipated minimum load over time. You know, you can read through the agreement and figure that out, but sometimes it's not clear what happens if you have a site that's aggregated, say in a hospital district or a school district or something like that, if they shut down one load, but then, you know, have load added in another part of the district, whether that is going to stay within the bandwidth that's allowable under the contract or trigger, for example, a partial termination provision. So it's important to look at those and see how the contract deals with aggregated loads. More and more customers are very interested in distributed generation and on-site solar, or it's part of their long-term plan to allow that in their companies. Some standard rep agreements don't allow that, so I encourage folks to look at that and ask folks what their long-term plans are for their businesses. Reps obviously, prefer to have prohibitions on that in their agreements because it locks in load for a longer time. But if a customer has a business plan where that's anticipated, then you need to think about that. Regulatory change provisions, again, look at those. Typically they're one-sided when they're sent your way. It's important to make sure that they're at least two-sided, that both regulatory changes, if they're going to be passed through, then, the costs and the benefits are passed through. And then if there is a material change in the price of the agreement as a result of that, what are your options? Termination provisions in REP agreements, they're generally pretty standard. But one thing that I encourage customers who don't procure energy all the time to focus on is just making sure that they understand the damages calculation and look at the present value of, the differences in the price of their agreement versus whatever a replacement agreement would be, because that's typically how the damage calculation is done. And then when contracts actually terminate, it is often very common for the agreements to contain provisions that you then go to a market price. And so if a customer doesn't plan for that, then they can end up going from a fixed to a floating index price, which again can impact volatility of pricing in their agreements.